So we got bricks. Now, I'm not gonna, if you don't know what bricks is, you better watch some introductory video here first. I can put some link down there. Then come back here. So, yeah. You know, I'm following some people here that I think are knowledgeable, that I think are experts in politics and economy and all of that. And all of those that I respect from having listening to them for quite a while now agree, it seems to me at least, that BRICS is a good thing. And that BRICS, you know, the last meeting just a couple of weeks ago or so, here in autumn 24, was a huge success. And, you know, I see there are pictures of Modi, of Prime Minister of India, or President or whatever he is, you know, the Indian leader and the Chinese leader shaking hands and kind of saying that now we're going to overcome our conflict here, which has been going on since the 60s. And I've been saying it through the years now, just hoping and praying that China and India can become friends. And I spoke to professors in China about this who said that politically and economically they will probably never be able to. But he said, because he's a Sanskrit professor who's also interested in Indian philosophy, that his mission in life was that India and China will be friends culturally and philosophically, intellectually. So, now they seem to at least give it a good try to become friends, at least, you know, not enemies, even politically and economically, because they realize that both gain from that. And there are old cultures on the planet, old cultures with a very, very old wisdom tradition for how to live peacefully and sustainably. You find it there in the Dharma of India, you find it in the Tao and, you know, the Confucian way, the way they call it, which I learned when I was there and we some or other got in contact with a group of top intellectuals who are also very well known in television and writing books and all that at that time, bestsellers, who said that, told us that they are working directly with the government or like in contact with the government to try to reintroduce and rebuild China again on their traditional culture, you know, Chinese culture based on philosophers such as, you know, Confucius and Lao Tzu. And yeah, that's another story, like this bestseller author Yudan, we also met and to you. She's a bestseller by writing books about Taoist and Confucian classical Chinese philosophy. That's the Chinese people. So, you know, I asked this guy, you know, who is one of the greatest artists in China, a sculptor, how can we learn to know? Because that's what we asked people when I walked around with a camera in 2012 or so, and earlier. How can we learn to understand and know the Chinese? And he answers like this. Yeah. How can we, I'll take that again. How can we understand China? And he just answered like this. Yeah, you got to understand the Chinese people and the Chinese culture which is shared by the Chinese people. Rather than looking at some, you know, political manifesto or leader faces on the media. But then we realized, and I read something written by the top leader there, that they are working. The Chinese, I can't find that document. If I can, I'll put it here later. But I remember him saying, this was the top leader, the chairman or prime minister, whatever what they are called there, official statement, that you shouldn't be afraid of us because, you know, we have no intentions of going out invading the world. We have enough with our own country here. And we take care of ourselves, but, you know, our philosophy, the Chinese traditional philosophy on this level of leading a country is that the leader should, that's the job of the leader, make sure, you know, that there is harmony within the country and all the people in it are happy. All those who live in the country, they should be happy. That's the job. and then the next step is to help that the adjacent country, the countries, your neighbor countries, can also build themselves that way. You know, you cooperate. And if you got more than you need and they are starving, and just help out. This is how people should be. This is how neighbors should be, isn't it? That's how people used to be before some became mad, you know, with greed or pride or whatever. And that's how it can be when there is some wisdom, you know, some real knowledge behind the leadership. In other words, and you, if you turn to India, you've got this, you've got the kshatriyas, meaning the leaders, but they are able to lead only to the extent that they're actually listening to those who are very wise and smart and, you know, knowledgeable. And that's how it was more in the past. Like here in Sweden, we had this Axel Oxenstierna, who was the advisor of several kings, one after another. And he was an expert in how to manage a country. And therefore, Sweden was, this was in the, Sweden was like an empire. Oof. Which is a tough thing to maintain, and they always crumble away after a while because they're artificial structures. trying to take over country over there and there and there and there with different people, different language, different everything, just so you can take their resources. Come on. That's primitive. So higher there are, at least when you read the books and you look at history, even study it a little closer, there are such cultures have been, these civilizations, based on such a knowledge that they could actually remain stable for hundreds, if not thousands of years. And we are talking then China, India, and I know when I say that some Westerners will go, no, they are doing all this. What did they do that was so bad? Oh, they invaded Tibet, which is another issue that we could talk about. But you know why? I don't know. Anyway, we could. So, but the point is, let's stick to the actual point here, that we can learn from our history, we can learn from these old scriptures written by the wise, you know, since thousands of years back and up till today. I mean, we have so much knowledge available in libraries and more moving out online. And if we could connect all the libraries online and then get this, the whole academic world of scriptures, which are incredibly overpriced in some snobbish, isolated little world behind high, heavy walls, get that also online and share knowledge, not taking knowledge, locking it into your safe and selling it expensively only to the rich. So then we can do it, I'm sure. And why I think BRICS, why BRICS gives me hope is that it's possible that they are doing that. Because we have the Chinese government, and now I'm talking this from first-hand experience because I met those people in China up there in the top academia who told me all this. And I heard it from the leaders, I read it, what I just told you. But then in India, I also happen to have friends and connections who are directly connected with Moody. And they tell us very much positive about him, that he is also a person who has high respect for traditional Indian wisdom, tradition Indian culture, where, yes, they used to live harmoniously side by side, Hindu Muslims. So he's sometimes said to be anti-Muslim, I'm not sure, but if you look at Indian history, yes, there were, of course, conquerors coming into India, and there have been conflicts between Hindu-Muslim, definitely. But that could also be managed. But the most important is to see that, the common wisdom, the universal wisdom, the wisdom that you find there both in the Vedic scriptures and tradition there in India, and the Muslim, the Islamic tradition there, and the Buddhist tradition, and the Christian too. They all share belief in God or some divinity, and that happiness is something that doesn't only come from collecting material things or power or whatever, enjoying this temporary matter, but it comes from within when we are living in harmony with God and each other, because we are raised from God, and there is a God who is not different, you know, several gods fighting up there, and therefore we should also fight. That's ridiculous. So if we can just get that far, then, you know, I see that there is hope. And with India and China, with these two different, I mean, some people think that in China people are just atheists and materialists and like that, but it's not so. Buddhism is really becoming popular, has been for a long time in China, and other spirituality too, including then their Taoist tradition. So, you know, in Asia, and this is what Westerners don't understand, or many leaders, it seems, they have this kind of cultural tradition, history. They are built upon something very old and deep and yes, wise. A knowledge about life and how to build a society harmoniously and in abundance, as they say, which is, you know, what we need now, isn't it? So if we just stop this stupid fighting, and I'm speaking to the people over here in the Europe and the West, it's I would say it's a hidden, not so any much even hidden anymore, racism going on here. That, you know, we, come on, you know, we Europeans, we white people here, especially us with blue eyes, you know, and all that, and then over there in the big, fantastic country controlled by us, we know better, you know. We can be broad-minded and, you know, respectful to the brownies and the, you know, these names that sometimes are used and invented, right? To those people over there, you know, in the global south, as they call it now, you know, the once their nation down in Africa and South America. Come on, we all know that they are not up to it. We don't like to say it, because then we, you know, they would accuse us of being racist, but come on, we know it. We are the greatest. And the ones over there in the West, they say it openly that they are the greatest, but of course, they're a big mix now, different cultures. But, you know, as long as you play with us and our rules, and you work in our gas stations and do the dirty, heavy lifting here, then we accept you too. So it's, and it seems that BRICS is now, and I really pray and hope that they, that they succeed and do it right. And I mean, you know, there are in the, this is something that also we can't see, I think, here in the West enough. That these people, they have old, old traditions and accumulated knowledge how to run countries, and their leaders, you know, you only become a leader in such a country if you are very qualified, if you're good at your job. So they know what they're doing. Because they're not just put there by popular vote, voted in by people who, you know, just
if I should dare to be a little negative here against so-called democracy here, because I don't know where it went. Where this voting just became a show. A media. Attraction. People, you know, the media companies can make money on it, and the politicians make money on it. They get all the support money and campaigning and celebrity. But it's a completely different thing from sitting there in the offices where you run the country from and making sure it works out fine and everyone is happy and everyone has a job and makes enough salary and can get good food and nice place to live and so on. Good quality air to breathe and water to drink and living safely without thieves and rogues and rascals and other countries invading you. And that's what it's about. It's a tough job, requiring a lot of, you know, the top expertise of the nation. Just as someone who looks cute and speaks good, you know, cool, and manages to fish for votes enough. So, I mean, we need to learn to respect each other, different countries. And I would say the West has to learn to respect, you know, as you say now, the global North has to learn to respect the global South. And give up this stupid, racist, condescending, how to say, chauvinistic, pride. Because, you know, when you do that, when you puff yourself up, or your project, or your company, or your country, whatever, to more than it actually is, or more than it can actually sustain, just like the kings here in Sweden used to then go down and take over other countries down there in Europe because they needed, you know, they ran out of money and they needed, they just plundered those countries. And now this belongs to us, yes. But then the people from those countries, they were then enemies of Sweden. And the king had to have armies in these countries all the time to defend their new great empire. So what happens after a while is that it becomes difficult to maintain it. You have too many enemies now, and maybe those were not resources, they cannot be properly integrated into your country. It's just chaos and problems there, and guerrillas or whatever you have. So then after a while the empire falls, and this is, that's what I see and say, at least, what we can find going on in the world today. The great big Western Empire is about to fall. And it doesn't really mean that it has to be a total destruction and suffering for everyone living in those places, but that the illusory structure there, this thing there that is outside of their own, of those own people, I mean inside the country, which actually is the country, that those outside of there, they are, you just let them go. So there's no empire anymore, meaning your country does not own and control that country over there and that and that and that on the other side of the planet. So poof. You know, and that's, you saw Great Britain becoming what it is now, Little Britain. Of course, they still maintain their name because I used to live there and I see that pride is still there, you know, living in the Great Britain still. I mean, it's sweet, you know, to be biggest and greatest and an empire and look at us. And that's what the Americans will now have to get used to also, you know, moving on. And this Make America Great Again. Why? Why do you always have to be so freaking great? Why not? Well, you could say, make America a great place to live again. But this being so damn great, I mean, what's the problem with you Americans over there? I know, I have American friends, I know enough many Americans to see that it's being injected into you since birth almost. I don't know why you have that need of being the greatest and the leaders and the smartest and the greatest and the greatest and, you know, we laugh at you. We others over here. That strange big place over there, you know, for remote part of the world across the ocean, who think they are at the center of it all and the leaders of us all. Come on. So again, they now say, when I'm speaking this, against, it's very quiet about this BRICS. And you hear something now and then from over there in the West, you know, that they're anti-Western civilization. Again, you know, they can only see that. If you're not with us, you're against us. If you are not under our control, if you're trying to break free from our control, you're against us, then you're our enemy. But come on. And I hear about the Chinese and Russians and Indians, they're saying, you know, we have, I just saw the Chinese leader say, we're not against the West, we're not against anyone. We're just trying to build up here a cooperative effort to support, you know, it's not that one of us is a leader, we're just helping each other the way it should be. So we can have nice trade with each other, money that are, you know, each one can pay and trade with their own currencies, and not being dependent on someone who just tries to control us and take from us when they want and need. You know, we had enough with this colonialism. I mean, they didn't say it straight out like that, but that's how they, what they have stated in other statements. So, and yes, that's all I can do here, just pray. Oh, you know, all of thee who are looking down upon us now from some higher realm, including God Almighty, please be kind on us humans here. Give us some wisdom and some intelligence and some just basic common sense, first of all, especially to those up there in the decision making positions, to wake up and make the right decision. Because this is such a nice world, with, you know, where most people are nice. Just want to be with their families and friends and have a good time and leave others alone. So yeah, I mean, as Krishna said there in the Bhagavad Gita, where there was a war actually building up, this old scripture of wisdom, that, you know, sometimes the leaders of this world, they think themselves too big and independent and powerful and become greedy and lusty and envious and whatever, and they start tormenting Mother Earth and those who live here on her. And then, well, you know, I arranged something to stop that. At that time, when the Bhagavad Gita was written, or the story where the Bhagavad Gita is from, said to be like 5,000 years ago or something, they basically killed each other in a huge war. But then, interesting, if you look at the Indian wisdom and tradition, the East India, the Bengal, and around there, people know about Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Some accept as a avatar of Krishna, of God, from the 16th century. And where his followers then said that God came 5,000 years ago to kill the demons, the demoniac kings, the leaders, with that war. But in this age, he has come to just kill our demoniac mentality. And well, if that statement is true, and there is hope. And at this time, and it could be such a little thing there in the mind of some leader. Am I going to do this or am I going to do that? Should I take that phone and ring up that leader over there in the other superpower and have a little chat? Hey, how are you doing? And well, I just thought we could talk a little how to get our relations better and help each other to solve the problems we are in, either between us or each one. That's what we should do, you know. Not so many of us up here can be a little lonely. I mean, that kind of talk, I mean, I would do that if I was in that position. It seems like Trump is a bit like that. Whatever else he may be or not be. But, you know, we got to see the good in each other. And I think that's in itself much of the solution here and the wisdom we should try and follow. So yeah, thanks for now. Hare Krishna.